You're listening to Strange Familiars. True stories of the paranormal, cryptids, hauntings, the occult, mythology, UFOs, folklore, weird and forgotten history. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Strange Familiars on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you are listening. Please share the Strange Familiars page and episodes on Facebook and other social media. If you have experienced something strange, or if you know a story you would like us to cover, email strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, and of course, strangefamiliars.com.
Welcome to Strange Familiars, everybody, and welcome back, Alice.
Hi.
You were here for a brief question on the last episode. People heard your voice when you talked to Ness a little bit, but had to bring you back because we're in your wheelhouse again.
Yeah, I do feel more comfortable here than in flannel.
Well, people really like Flannel Man. They have very much responded, not specifically to your story, but to Flannel Man in general. So that's good. Keep those Flannel Man stories coming, everybody. I'm really enjoying them, and we kind of hit a nerve, I guess, with that.
Yeah, maybe other fabrics will start to be represented.
Silk Man, he's a little fancier.
Gabardine Gabby. I can come up with
So tonight, what I wanted to talk about is Wild Men. But not the usual kind of wild men I talk about. And if you've heard me on other podcasts, and probably a good bit on this one as well, you know I've written now 2 books about historical Bigfoot accounts. And these are generally, they're most often reported as wild men. They call them by a bunch of different names. There's a bunch of local names depending on the newspaper and the location and so forth. But in general, most of the reports of these creatures before Bigfoot and Sasquatch became a household name, they were called wild men. But I mentioned on these interviews, these Bigfoot shows, that for every one report I find that I think is a Bigfoot creature, arguably, I toss out at least probably 10 to 20 stories of other wild men. Most often, these are circus wild men that they talk about. That's the second most common wild man. Sometimes they're just some guy with long hair in the woods.
Like kind of akin to a hermit or something.
A hermit, a homeless guy, some kind of itinerant, someone that made people uncomfortable for whatever reason. And usually these are, it's very obvious in the article, if they get taken to a county home, if they get taken to the poorhouse, if they get taken to jail sometimes, it's very obvious, you know, they're not a Bigfoot.
It's sort of like akin to being feral.
Yes. Yes, and anybody who kind of looked a little bit like
wild.
That was a wild man in that case. So tonight we're talking about these other kinds of wild men because we found some interesting stories, and because of the circus connection, I wanted to talk about them because we dug up some really cool stories. I wish I would have found it. One of the stories of the wild men that wasn't Bigfoot that I found, the sheriff takes the guy back and cuts his hair, puts him in jail and cuts his hair.
And then, like, isn't that kind of like, you start to hear that, you know, anytime someone's, you know, bohemian of any kind, they're going to take you and get your hair cut.
Yeah, I mean, that becomes kind of
like a common thing then.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you can see that in films up into the hippie era, really.
Yeah, like the beatniks are going to go and get their hair, they're going to make them cut their hair and join the army or
hose them down with with the fire hose and cut their hair. They drug the guy into jail and they cut his hair off because they didn't like the looks of him. You know, I often think if I was walking around back then.
Although some people could get away with.
Yeah, you had your Wild Bills, right?
Yeah, another wild one.
Was he wild because of he had long hair and a beard? Or
I think he was just dangerous.
He was wild because he was dangerous. Yeah. I used to be called Wild Man. when I used to do telephone work, mm-hmm. there was a certain customer who always called me Wild Man. He called my brother the governor, I think. I don't know why. This was way before Walking Dead, so yeah. It had nothing to do with that. He'd say hi, governor, to him, and then he'd turn to me and say, hi, Wild Man, because I had the long hair and a beard. And it didn't occur to me until I was doing this sort of Wild Man research, and I was coming across the term all the time. I was like, oh, he was like old school calling me a Wild Man mm-hmm. because I had long hair and a beard. I was a Wild Man.
Yeah.
So, and did you know that I met a Wild Man? A real Wild Man.
A real Wild Man?
A real Wild Man.
No, I didn't know that.
You will know when I tell you the story, because mm-hmm. I've told you the story before. Professional wrestling sort of inherited the circus sideshow thing.
Yeah.
We watched the Andre the Giant documentary recently.
Yeah, and it really hadn't occurred to me how much that is really heir to the sideshow.
Yeah, it was really interesting. You
had, even the way that the performers are styled, the way that the like the broadsheets or, you know, the equivalent posters look. There's so much like early giants. Like seeing Andre the Giant presented, he could have been like a giant 100 years previous to him.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and they really just took the terminology, mm-hmm. the look of things. It was really...
And just that, like, just that showmanship, even with that wink-wink that everybody knows it's not real. Yeah. Like, that you know there's a part of you that's being sold.
Yeah, I was never... when I was young, you know, I think every young boy in America at some point, you know, at least when I was growing up, would turn on professional wrestling on Saturday, you know, after cartoons, mm-hmm. the professional wrestling came on, and they'd watch that a little bit. But I was never like a maniac fan.
Mm-hmm.
But we watched the Andre the Giant documentary recently. I watched the documentary on the Iron Sheik just because I found the Andre the Giant one so fascinating. Mm-hmm. And these connections with the circus sideshow and stuff were so interesting to me that I watched the documentary on the Iron Sheik. Both of them really interesting, mm-hmm. super interesting documentaries. But it occurred to me that I met a Wild Man. I got very excited and very happy about this. So when I was in high school, my friend, his grandfather, worked for the Maryland Athletic Commission or Athletic Board, I forget what it was. And even though this was, you know, hardly a real sport, it was still governed by the Athletic Commission, professional wrestling. So whenever these wrestlers would come to town, his grandfather would take him and one of his friends, just pick mm-hmm. one of your friends and we'll go see wrestling tonight. Great seats all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And he would always bring us down to meet the wrestlers or to stand right where the wrestlers came out of the locker room
mm-hmm.
and all this, you know, stuff like that. It was really, really interesting. These guys were all huge. Like, they were all big.
Andre the Giant.
You see Andre the Giant compared to them and you're like, but it just drives home how massive Andre must have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm not a small guy and I wasn't mm-hmm. a particularly small guy in high school. And these guys just towered over me. I mean, there's just, you know, like refrigerators walking yeah. by you. You know, they're just massive. Well, one time, he says, come on, I want you to meet somebody. And his grandfather was great friends with George the Animal Steele. Now, this is your typical Wild Man. His character, he painted his tongue green. He was just a naturally hairy guy, uh-huh. so he had like hair all over his back and stuff. He shaved head, so he's bald, but he's hairy everywhere else. He painted his tongue green, and he pretended not to speak. So he would, you know.
I like that idea that when you retreat to the woods, that you grow hair and you just kind of forget all about the world that you lived in previously. Yeah. You don't remember how to talk. You can't interact with people.
And I don't remember
social graces.
I don't remember George the Animal Steele's actual backstory.
Yeah.
The character's backstory.
Uh-huh.
The man was actually a teacher, and he was apparently a really smart guy, actually. And my friend's grandfather loved him and considered him a friend. Really enjoyed talking to him, loved when he came through town. He that was just like his favorite guy was George the Animal Steele. And I forget his real name. I'm sure there's wrestling fans out there who know his real name. I think even sometimes he was brought to the ring in chains, and then
and that's the like a holdover from the old sideshow days.
Yeah. So he took us back, and I don't think it was back in the locker room because we saw that Andre the Giant documentary, and they said like no one but wrestlers and referees were allowed in the locker room. So I think this was outside the locker room, but still sort of backstage. And he says, come on back, come on back. And he brings us back. He says, I really want to meet you, George. And he was very excited for us to meet him. And he was standing there, George the Animal Steel was standing there having a normal conversation with someone, speaking plain English. As soon as we walked up, as soon as he saw us there, he turned and snapped into character. And he shook our hands, but he was very, like, he's sticking his tongue out. And he's, you know, he won't speak English. He's pretending to be. Now, he was supposed to be a heel, I think. I think he was supposed to be a bad guy, but he was not being mean or aggressive to us in any way. Shook our hand, and my friend's grandfather's like, come on, George, just say hi to him. And he would not snap out of character.
Oh, that's...
it was endearing, really. Yeah. I mean... I could tell his grandfather was frustrated. His grandfather just wanted him to talk to us and show that he was a real guy and his friend and stuff.
Yeah, but he was dedicated to the show.
That's it. He would not break character, which, especially now I look back, I find that very, very endearing. I don't know how much it meant to me at the time, but now I'm very excited that I got to meet a wild man. So, you know,
a professional wild man.
Exactly, like a showman wild man. There's another thing with these circus wild men that crosses over, I think, into the Bigfoot wild man that I'll talk about. I've read in these articles that I've collected of the circus wild men.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell me if this was a regular thing or maybe something that just a few circuses did. But it seems like what they would do often is have the wild man escape. And it seems like it was often when like the last day the circus was in town or one of the last days. And then there'd be a big chase around the grounds where they'd have to chase down the wild man and get him back in the cage. This seems like it happened frequently in these circuses because you'd see these newspaper articles where, oh, the wild man escaped, and they had to chase him down and get him back in the cage, and he was scaring women and children.
Oh, yeah, often the snake charmer's snake would escape, too.
Oh, okay, so this is just to drum up excitement.
Yeah, and to let you know that something's, you could be a part of this.
It's dangerous.
You could wake up and that snake could be in your house if you live close to the circus. Okay. So you better keep track of what's going on.
Often... this plays right into what I believe are these legitimate Bigfoot sightings, where they will say, oh, it's escaped from a circus. This gorilla, this wild man, whatever they're calling it, must have escaped from a circus. And I often wonder if it's that sort of routine, that wild man escaping routine that has helped with that idea. Now, I know it's an easy explanation for them. Mm-hmm. If they're looking for an explanation for this creature in the woods... and you know that gorillas don't live in North America, which by the early 1900s, certainly, you know, we knew that. The escape from a circus is probably one of the logical things. I often think that this sort of Wild Man Escape Act really kind of played into that.
Mm-hmm.
Helped that along, because you do see that a lot in the Bigfoot articles as well. They'll talk about this 7-foot gorilla somebody saw in the woods, and they'll say, well, you know, it must have escaped. It must have been a crashed circus train, or it must have escaped from a circus.
And there were a lot of times when some of those events were true. If, you know, there were a lot of accidents with circuses, train accidents and things where animals got loose. So, I mean, there is... it almost became like a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know?
Yeah, but when these circus trains crashed, they did make the newspapers everywhere.
Yeah.
There were no mystery circus trains that crashed. Like, a lot of times, they won't be able to attribute it to a specific crash. They'll say,
they'll just say it must have happened, even though there wasn't a circus in town that week.
Exactly, And I found other articles where these guys, I mean, these animals cost them a lot of money to import. A lot of money. First of all, barely anyone actually had a gorilla when we were talking about gorillas. But chimpanzees and monkeys and the very few circuses that actually did have mountain gorillas by the early 1900s, first of all, they didn't live long. They didn't know how to take care of them well enough. But the ones that did have them, they were expensive. And when they got loose, they tracked them down.
I mean, they're more of a commodity than the people might have been.
The legitimate animal escapes. Mm-hmm. You will find that the people from the circus still in town.
Looking
for it and tracking them down and so forth. So, but it's really interesting that it's just that became part of the routine. The wild man escaping and running across the ground. And
he could do anything. You know, you don't know.
These circus wild men, for the most part, they weren't wild men, shall we say?
Yeah, I think the circus wild men fall into two categories: people who are just trying to do an act because they're a part of the circus anyway. Like in the case of Houdini, before he did magic, he did a wild man act.
Well, you can't just skip over that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there's We'll come back to Houdini.
Okay. The second part of that is there are wild men who are from some exotic land, so that makes them wild because they're from Borneo, from Mars, from... You know, they're just...
From Fiji.
From Fiji,
but
yeah.
If people think back to our show about the Fiji cannibals, mm-hmm. they would have been generally considered wild men in the circus.
Yeah, and a lot of times those wild men are either from some other... legitimately from some other exotic location, or they have some sort of deficit intellectually or otherwise, which can mold them into being somebody who just looks a little wild and different.
So if you had someone like the little general, if people remember back to the Fiji cannibal episode, mm-hmm. who was a little person, mm-hmm. also from Fiji, so he's doubly exotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the
he
wild...
He checks two boxes.
Then. Exactly, like the wild men from Borneo, who were really from Ohio, they... had some form of dwarfism, and they were intellectually impaired to some degree where they couldn't take care of themselves.
Well, we have stuff on them and Houdini. Do you want to talk about Houdini first, or do you want to talk about them first?
Well, actually, the more research I did about this article about the wild men of Borneo, I found out that it's another group of brothers that played in lesser sideshows as the wild men of Borneo.
What is it?
This article that I found.
Oh, the article you have there.
Yeah, so there was more than... a lot. That happened a lot, too, where people, giants, would take on the names of other giants just to try to... People didn't know who they were looking for. They didn't have access to the TV and know these are the legitimate wild men of Borneo.
Right.
They could just be two other... But they knew they were... Maybe they knew they were brothers. Maybe they saw a photo. Maybe. Probably not. So people would kind of piggyback on
name. There were several acts with several circuses going by the Wild Men of Borneo.
Yeah, the most famous one is a pair of little, they called them wild men, but they're just really kind of small men who had really amazing strength. Sometimes you'll see them in striped tights. They look like little sort of elves.
Are these African Americans?
No, they're not. No, no. They're just like kids from a farm in Ohio.
I mentioned that because that's the other thing that happened a lot. You will find a lot of these wild man articles in the paper where they just got an African-American guy and dressed him up, you know, in a crazy outfit, maybe painted his face. I found one article where a guy had horns implanted. I think they were bothering him or something, so he had to have them medically removed. So he had some kind of horns. I don't know if it was... you know, something that he attached, like they put a screw base in or something in his head, or if they actually tried to, like, surgically attach horns to him or something.
Oh, and even the Echo and Iko, who were brothers with albinism, they had a book about it recently called True Vine, which details their kidnapping and life with the circus. They were billed as wild men from Mars.
From Mars?
Yeah.
The planet Mars.
Yeah.
That's bizarre, right?
Well, I mean, how often would somebody in that era see two albino African-American men with dreads? They probably did look like they were from Mars.
And they were from Virginia, right?
Yeah, I think they were from somewhere.
And that's a pretty tragic story. Weren't they kidnapped from their mother or something?
Yeah, and then, I mean, and there's sort of, you know, even if there was a tentative agreement, a lot of people, I think, could be... Kidnapping probably isn't too far off the mark if it isn't dead on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if your time's up and your contract's up, what, are they going to drive you back?
Right. Yeah, and we've talked about this before as well, about how there's a...
I think there's a racial bias in the performers, in that there's definitely a hierarchy even within the circus, of even by who's paid what.
No,
but there's...
I think there's a sort of apologetics, sideshow apologetics that kind of happen as well. And one of those is these performers were paid really well and they couldn't do anything else. True on one hand, mm-hmm. not always true on the other. In the case of the Fiji cannibals, for instance, mm-hmm. we don't know that they ever got paid.
Yeah, they were taken care of.
Right.
The manager was probably
their
paid.
Manager got paid. He's mm-hmm. the one who brought them from Fiji, probably against their will. We did the bonus, remember, about the woman who and her husband who wanted to be buried together?
The man that they found in the funeral home in Ohio.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, he was actually...
And he was returned.
Yeah, an Aboriginal man.
Right. But there was some question as to whether he left on his own will. I mean, it was...
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Fiji cannibals were removed from their homeland by someone who was a... former and or current slave.
Slave catcher.
Slave catcher.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty telling in itself.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a guy who formerly ran slaves, and then suddenly now he's in the sideshow business bringing people from Fiji. And he was the one who was their manager then. Or no, he sold them. Right?
He sold them.
You weren't allowed to sell people, but you could sell attractions.
You could sell an act, yeah.
You could sell an act.
But so, the people were the act, so...
If it makes us feel better now, I think we... Well, they, you know, they were really well paid. And I think if you're talking about, like, Tom Thumb, who was a little person,
mm-hmm.
and he did make a lot of money. Tom Thumb got very, very rich. But Tom Thumb was white.
Yeah.
He was a little person, but he was white, and he was from the same...
General area.
...town as Barnum, right?
Yeah, the same general area, if not...
Roughly the same.
Yeah.
So it really seems like Barnum took care of him.
Whereas Millie Christine, who were conjoined twins, were born into slavery. They were born in the time before slavery ended, and they were sold several times to different people. Eventually, they did make money, but...
Yeah, I think there's a great disparity on how these performers were treated. And I think there was a great deal of racism as well. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back to the Wild Men. A lot of times these articles, it'll just be some local African American guy that they dressed up in a costume, and they'll expose him as a, you know, he's just a regular guy, you know. And so sometimes people get mad about it. Sometimes, you know, they talk about, you know, people storming around, you know, getting upset that the Wild Man wasn't a real Wild Man. And sometimes they're just kind of, oh well, you know, that's the circus. So
you get what you pay for with the circus, I think.
So Houdini was a Wild Man. This was interesting to me. He was not far from here where he started.
No, Houdini started with the Welsh Brothers Circus in Lancaster. So very close to us. I think that's a fun circus fact. That.
And he did not start as a magician.
No, he started as a wild man named Progia, I guess. I don't know where, like, the derivation of that. That was his earliest act, and he got paid pretty well to work for Welsh Brothers Circus. Apparently, they were good at feeding their performers. That's something he commented on. He was well-fed, and he was paid for, I think, like, 5 months, $20 a week or something like that, for he and his wife.
Which was good back then.
Yeah. And they traveled. Welsh Brothers Circus was mainly a Pennsylvania circuit. They were kind of a smaller circus at first.
Are there pictures of Houdini as a wild man?
There may be. I haven't seen any, but I've seen descriptions of him, and I think it's probably fairly similar to the other wild men you see, with some sort of stuck-on hair and someone throwing raw meat at you. Or
the Fred Flintstone Tarzan skin over the shoulder skin outfit.
And then behind bars somewhere rattling some chains or some bars.
Growling at people,
yeah.
By the way, I because of my interest in Bigfoot wild men, I now have a great interest in these sideshow wild men as well. And I am collecting wild man pictures. So if anyone comes across circus sideshow pictures of any type...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be something we'd be interested in.
Yeah. Please let us know. But wild men as well.
So the cool thing about that is that also the winter quarters, if you're not familiar with circus winter quarters, it just means that the circuses would find some place to keep the animals for the winter time. And a lot of the performers stayed in those areas if they were going to be traveling with the circus again. And then would sometimes live in close by, because there's a lot of circuses that were in this area. And so the performers lived in Philadelphia or lived in Chester County. And then they would do kind of like a winter route and do the major, they could probably hit New York and do the major sideshows in the museums up there. There were some in Wilkes-Barre. There's, you know, hit Philadelphia, and then they could just kind of do a winter circuit and keep their base. And so Welsh Brothers had their winter quarters in Lancaster. So there was probably a time when Houdini was walking the streets of Lancaster.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Who overwintered here? We found out someone wintered in Red Lion.
In Red Lion, Pawnee Bill.
Pawnee Bill, who was, that was a Wild West performer?
Yeah, very similar. He was friends with Wild Bill. Mm-hmm. Pawnee Bill could actually speak Pawnee, so he was a translator for a while.
Okay.
But his real name was Gordon Lilly. He and his wife, May Lilly, who was a female sharpshooter, kind of akin to Annie Oakley. They did like a Wild West show.
And they wintered in Red Lion.
Pretty
cool.
Which makes perfect sense, because most of the sort of iconic pictures of them were taken in York
by the Swords Brothers.
Yeah.
Who is the photographer.
Who I collect and research, so.
Do we know, was it a hotel here in Redline, or was it... It was a farm. Did we read that they ever went
to
a farm?
Yeah, most of the times they would, like, they needed space for the animals.
Okay.
So they would need, like, farm settings mainly. There was a circus that overwintered in Glen Rock, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's
But we used to live in Glen Rock, too.
Yeah, so there's a lot of these little towns around here. The one great thing that York has going for it is that it's close to other places.
Yeah, well, we're
like, sort of dead center in the
East Coast.
Yeah.
It's a place where you can get to other places fairly easily from.
Thank God no one else would live here otherwise. If you couldn't get to somewhere else.
Wild Men of Borneo. Now, this name became so popular that even these legitimate Wild Men articles, I find, mm-hmm. I'll call them legitimate. The ones that I think are Bigfoot.
Yeah.
I guess they're all legitimate. It's just a matter of what they're talking about, more or less. The articles I consider Bigfoot, sometimes I'll even say that. The Wild Man of Borneo was seen on the hills outside of town,
that's why I think this article that I found about like the end days of these sort of second string Wild Men of Borneo is so fascinating, because at first I thought it was the Wild Men of Borneo, but the more I read it, I was like, this is a different group of brothers from a different area at a different time. Apparently they exhibited with like somebody in the area found some mastodon tooth, and then all of a sudden he's got his own sideshow kind of
right.
thing. So they're not on the same level as like the Wild Men of Borneo you see in like the famous.
Did Barnum have the Wild Men of Borneo?
Well, one of the, I can't remember who they traveled with. A lot of times they would go with but one of the major ones, because
okay.
they're a group of people that if you typed in Wild Men of Borneo, you would see Barney and Hiram Davis, who are the Wild Men of Borneo. The most well-known by that name.
But it became such a popular name that every little sideshow, it seemed like if they're going to have a wild man, a lot of times it was followed with of Borneo.
Yeah.
Even local, like if someone went a local church fair and stuff, a lot of times they'll say like, Bill Davis played the Wild Man of Borneo for the
Yeah,
kids.
And I do have some postcards of like amateur theatricals where people are either being a wild man or they're a dog man, kind of like JoJo the Dog-Faced Boy, or it'll be a guy in a dress with a beard, and he's the bearded lady, so...
Because of the nature of this podcast, we have to take a step back and say, dog man, not werewolf. Not a werewolf, not a dog man like the cryptids. This was actually a boy or a fellow who had, what's the name of the...
Hypertrichosis.
So he had hair growing all over him.
Yeah, I think most people have heard of JoJo the Dog-Faced Boy, haven't they?
Yes, but they wouldn't... When you say dog man, people who listen to this...
Think of something else.
Yeah, their ears will pick up. Ooh, dog man. I just want to be clear on that. Because,
that's a horse of a different color.
Yeah. So the very interesting article you found about the second string Wild Men of Borneo.
Yeah, and their sad, pitiful end. This, instead of being the famous Hiram and Barney Davis, these guys were John Henry and Will Evans from Illinois instead of Ohio.
So let's go ahead and hear the article. This is from 1903?
Yeah, this is from Decatur, Illinois, and this is the history of the Evans men, once used as freaks without much pretense, traveled with shows and now winding up at the poor farm. That's the headline. John Henry and Will Evans, two brothers commonly known as the Wild Men from Borneo, are to be sent to the poor farm. They've been living in a hut on the river west of the city with a man named Jay Williams, who had the smallpox and has been under quarantine. They are poor, and the county has been providing food for them, and the overseer decided that it'd be cheaper and better to care for them at the county farm. Groceries were sent to the house Saturday. In a day or two, the place will be fumigated, and the Evans brothers will be brought to the city and sent to the poor farm. While the brothers have always been known as the Wild Men from Borneo, they are, as a matter of fact, not from Borneo, but are native-born Macon County citizens. They have appeared in public, and one not knowing the pair might easily mistake them for Wild Men. They are about as queer-looking freaks as are seen in any show. The men are smaller than the average man, and have the appearance of having been about half-dried. Their features are distorted, and there seem to be 1,000 wrinkles on their faces. The two have always been queer-looking, and while they have brothers and sisters who are all right in appearance, they have a nephew who is the same kind of a freak. John Henry was at one time married to a woman who looked like the albino woman in a circus, but they did not get along and separated. When the father of the two boys died, he left each of his children 10 acres of land, but these two borrowed money on the land to build houses, and never being able to pay off the mortgage, lost the land. They've always lived along the river west of the city and worked at different times at the sawmills and other places where they could secure jobs. In the early days, the Evans boys traveled with a show. Jacob Gross, who's now postmaster at Niantic, started a show. He found, near Niantic on the Corral Place, a relic which was supposed to be a mastodon tusk and some other large teeth. These things he fixed up and took them out to exhibit, and also took the Evans boys along as wild men. Mr. Gross traveled over a good deal of the country, showing the mastodon teeth and the wild men. The mastodon relics finally fell into the hands of Jesse Lockhart, and decorated his hog house for a long time. And the Evans boys afterwards traveled with Charles Caldwell when he had a circus on the road. They appeared as the wild men and were chained in a cage. It did not take much makeup or pretense to convert the Evans brothers into wild men, for their appearance is certainly very strange. The two men are all right mentally, but they are not educated and are almost incapable of caring for themselves. Which is very similar to the real wild men of Borneo.
Yeah. So these were Americans.
Yeah, just Midwestern kids.
That looked a little
different. Yeah, I'd be curious to know what their particular issues were, if they were little people or if they had some
circus,
form of...
there's pictures of them somewhere, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably
it might not be identified, but...
Yeah, there's probably a photo somewhere.
Yeah.
I just thought it was sort of a tragic ending. So often there's not a good ending.
Right,
to sideshow people.
Yeah, like we were saying, I mean, some were paid and some made some money. Chang and Ang, the Siamese twins, so-called Siamese twins, they did very well. They made millions, right? Weren't they millions?
When they had to start sending their 21 kids to college, they went back and...
That's when they worked for Barnum. That's the only time they worked for Barnum, right? Yeah.
But so, I mean, there are some people who, were able to have a farm or, live out their days with what they had earned.
But I tend to think those are the exceptions more than the rule, sadly.
Yeah, and a lot of people fell prey to disease. I think the places that they were living and huddled places in cities, it just makes you more prone to disease.
Well,
TB,
once again, if you go back to our episode on the Fiji cannibals, Barnum's cannibals episode, and it looks more and more, the more research we do, we don't stop doing research, by the way, when we're interested in these topics. When you hear us do a show on them, that's not the end for us. We continue to do research, and we've continued to research the Little General since then. And the more research we do, the more we're convinced that his bones were sold, or his body was sold.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's too much of a precedent in other areas of the circus.
Yeah. And Barnum in particular.
To me, it really was solidified when I heard again about Jumbo when he died.
Jumbo was the elephant that Barnum procured from England. They had him in England, right? In London or something.
Yeah, another circus, I think.
He procured it, brought it to America. It was a huge elephant.
Yeah, and when he died, he had the hide taxidermied, and then he had the bones...
Jumbo was hit by a train, which is tragic.
I know.
It's completely tragic. Killed by a train, so Barnum skins him, has the skin stuffed, takes the bones, has the skeleton,
now he's got two exhibits,
articulated, and sends him in two different directions. Says, now I have two Jumbos.
Mm-hmm. So when I heard that, I thought, is that what ended up happening to the Little General? It's definitely possible.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Barnum himself didn't sign off on that, but...
But a lot of times, Barnum wasn't the one to necessarily do the things that we now find distasteful.
Exactly.
He had agents to do that work for him. And while he might have been a great philanthropist and humanitarian, there are definitely some indelicate aspects to the circus, which...
He was good at keeping himself insulated.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah, I mean, he was very much a politician in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Let other people get their hands dirty, make money when you can make money, and you keep yourself insulated from the dirty work. That's he
capitalism.
Didn't invent that.
Yeah, that's capitalism.
Yeah, he certainly didn't invent that. Anything else on Sideshow Wild Men before we move to the even more tragic Wild Men?
It's something that some aspect of it carried through, and I think even the fascination with people with some forms of hirsutism, bearded ladies, follows in that same sort of fascination.
Yeah, there weren't hard and fast, you could be a sort of wild man and a performer in another way. There would be some crossover.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's a job sort of anyone could do, in the same way that if you're the wife of someone in the circus, you could be a snake charmer. because as long as you didn't have a fear of snakes, you could be a snake charmer. Or as long as you could get your hair up, you know, you could be a moss-haired girl. Those are things that anybody could do.
Those are sometimes called
Circassians.
They're really cool looking.
They look like early, like, afros, basically. Like
crazy looking hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was all, right? They would just...
Yeah, it was just stale beer. They just put it up with, like, stale beer.
And people would come to look at them because they had crazy hair.
Yeah. A lot of times they wore sort of revealing clothing, though,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
they
were
that was
sort
the
of
main,
gently
like,
suggestive, yeah. I've seen
because they're, like, they're exotic.
Right.
They're from an exotic land. They might do anything, like wild men. You don't know what they might do. They're from a different place, you know.
Yeah.
And whereas, like, the women with the hair, they're often, like, bearded women were often seen in a very feminine way. Not as wild. Like, as soon as they were old enough to be seen as women, then they were often made to look as elegant as possible, but just with the addition of their beard.
Yeah, I've seen, like, some of the photos you've showed
me. Yeah, like, Annie Jones is...
absolutely beautiful dresses.
She's beautiful. And... she's always, like, immaculately kept her hair, which she had, like, long hair, besides the hair in her face and her body, is amazingly kept, and she's very elegant.
Yeah, it's not like they tried to make these women look manly in any sense. They were very feminine, but with beards.
Yeah.
That was the kicker with them. It was very interesting. At some point, I'm going to do a Circus Wildman book. I think it's going to be mostly images. It's going to be after I do a few more of these Bigfoot Wildman
books.
Yeah,
and is it the wild man in Mexico that has the long, creepy fingernails? There's a lot of
awesome images out there. And then so many that I've seen that I haven't seen anywhere else when we go to these photo shows and stuff. So it should be a neat book, image-wise at least.
And I don't think they show up as often in sideshow photography from, like, the major photographers because, like, anybody could do that.
Yeah.
You know, so only, like, the major players would get their photo taken in that.
Not a lot you can name by name. You can name them by title. Wild Man of Borneo, Fiji Cannibals, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But not a lot you remember by their name.
Yeah, and if Houdini hadn't gone on to be Houdini, Eric Weiss hadn't turned into Houdini, we wouldn't know about his time as a wild man.
Yeah. Pennsylvania wild man. Houdini. That's very, very cool. Found another Pennsylvania wild man. In my searches, and this is a tragic story. It's very interesting.
I think it's fascinating that he made the paper so often, but no one bothered to help him. Like, he's funny as a novelty story, but at the same time, there, besides his neighbors, there isn't this wellspring of help for this man who's obviously troubled.
Yeah. So in my quest to find local wild man stories of the Bigfoot sort, I came across, several of the other sort of wild men, the sort of... hairy guy that scared people for one reason or another. Most of them end up being, you know, itinerants or drunks or homeless or just passing through a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
There's a funny article where people, you know, a wild man goes to East Berlin, which is a town near us, and the whole town shuts up. They're so afraid that it's a wild man. And newspapermen come the next day, and they said everybody was like ran inside because they were afraid the newspapermen. I don't know if this was a jab at newspapermen from a newspaper, you know, but they said the whole town like locked all their windows and stuff. And finally, a lady stuck her head out and asked them if they were wild men.
Wow!
And they said, "No, we're just reporters," you know. So I don't know if that's it's supposed to be a humorous article.
How do you answer that question? Are you a wild man?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do I look like a wild man?
I guess you better answer. You know, back then you get shot or get hot water dumped on you from above or whatever the case. But I found this fellow, and he appears in the paper several times. They talk about a wild man in Hanover. And there's one story I printed in, I think it's in two of my books. I think it's in the Pennsylvania Bigfoot book. And my first book, Beyond the Seventh Gate, because it's just such a bizarre story. These wild man stories keep popping up around Hanover. And I did find some legit, like, you know, 8-foot gorilla scaring people in Hanover stories. I think they called it a man bear. That sounds like a legitimate Bigfoot creature.
Yeah.
There, some of these other ones pop up. And this one is from 1874, which is... shortly before we start reading these stories of this Daniel Luckenbill.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this is not him. 1874, this is August 11th from the York Daily, 1874. A sensation of a new order is now exciting the people of Hanover, York County. A wild man has been seen in Sager's Woods on several occasions by individuals who are willing to take an oath to the fact. He is described as being attired in women's clothes, face masked, and a large black dog following at his heels. The neighborhood is greatly excited at the appearance of the strange-looking object, and the young men are about forming themselves into a band for the purpose of capturing him. So, weird little detail in a mask.
Yeah.
It was just such a weird story that I put it in the Bigfoot book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think it's a Bigfoot, but it's just like weird details. Dressed in women's clothes, running through the woods, a mask, and a black dog following him. The only thing possible supernatural about that is the black dog, which gets into a whole other thing with black dogs, which are these, they pop up in these stories, and you never know whether they're these supernatural black dogs that people report, or just a natural, you know, mm-hmm. somebody's pet, or a wild dog, or whatever. So the black dog supernatural thing is kind of like, it's hard to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Hanover, 1874. Unless Hanover is fraught with wild men.
Have you been there recently?
Actually, I have. We were there together, and
it's a lawless land of wonder. And
Hanover is its own place.
It is, much like York.
I like Hanover.
I do. I think Hanover is sort of a hidden gem of architecture and potential.
It's a weird little place, and it's got like McSherrystown. Is it McSherrystown? Is that the little Catholicville?
Right, yeah.
It was basically right next to it, and it's just completely this area is very Protestant. Mm-hmm. York County is very, very Protestant in general, and there's this like hardcore Catholic area.
Yeah, it's almost like you cross the line from York County to Adams County, then it's okay to be Catholic again. Like, you can stop being German now, cross the line.
Well, and,
or continue to be German, but be German Catholic.
And I mean, not far from Maryland there either, you know, which is Maryland. But it's just a really weird combination of things. Hanover is like this historic town, and you drive through it, it's very historic, but it's just another one of these. It feels like, and I don't mean this as an insult, because I think Red Lion is very similar where we live. Kind of this lost borough where it's like, are we going to be a historic place? Are we going to try to be more modern?
Are we historic only because we've never progressed? Or are we historic because we care about preservation?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of these like teetering on the edge like that. But it's a neat place. It's one of the places we considered moving after Glen Rock.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking at places in Hanover. So this, as I take my glasses off so I can read. This is June 5th, 1875, and around this time is where we start getting these reports of this other wild man, and they name him.
So this is only a year after that, the one that you read.
This is a year after that one, yeah.
Huh.
So this is very, very small type, so I'll try to get through this. This is from the Democratic Advocate in Westminster, Maryland, June 5th, 1875. The Hanover, Pennsylvania Citizen says, "Sometime since, there appeared in a York paper a statement concerning a wild man said to have been discovered near our town. The article, though incorrect in most particulars, was not wanting in that grain of truth which generally saves a sensational story from utter condemnation as being made out of whole cloth. We have taken pains to ascertain the whole truth, which we now lay before our readers, and surely it is sad enough, for the conditions of the subject would really be no worse, would in fact be far better, had he been born in savagery. Daniel Luckenbill, the man in question, was born about 60 years ago near Jefferson, this county. His parents were respectable people and gave their son an ordinary English education. Doubtless his mind was early imbued with the sad superstition which, in later life, has made him the object of mingled loathing, fear, and pity. When a young man, he married and, as far as the world saw, prospered in business. Death invaded his home, and after short intervals his parents and his wife died. His mind became affected, and about 20 years ago he was wholly overcome by the delusion that he was under the spell of evil spirits who were tormenting him. Forsaking his friends, he betook himself to the solitude of the woods near the farm of Mr. John Hoffaker in West Mannheim Township, about 6 miles southeast of Hanover, where he built himself a small hut made of earth in which he passed a number of years. Some kind neighbors, taking pity on him, put up a small but comfortable building. He occupied this only a short time, for under the notion that the witches were after him, he fired his home and it was burned to the ground. For shelter he dug a pit in the ground, about 11 feet long by 3 feet wide, and the same depth, with a covering of stones and earth, where he has since spent his miserable days. His furniture consists of a bed of filthy rags and a cooking apparatus that would disgrace a Digger Indian, comprising a tiny stove, the gift of a neighbor, an old dingy coffee pot, a jar, and several old crocks. He is covered with rags, his feet bare, and presents a horrible appearance. He's about 5 feet 9 inches tall, small beard and long thin hair on a long and rather well-shaped head. He is said to be of great strength and very swift of foot, and at times very savage and dangerous. He is quite deaf, and it is said that he has quite a good memory. He has an especial fondness for tobacco, and as far as known, has never been sick. The neighbors, some moved by fear and others by pity, furnish him with food. Taken altogether, we have never seen so wretched a being, or so miserable a sight outside an insane asylum, and few there can match the utter wretchedness of this poor old man. So that's Daniel Luckenbalt. That property would have been, best of my guess, somewhat near Cador State Park.
What's now, it could even be, where the water is now.
Yeah.
Near the lake, somewhere around there.
Yeah, we were trying to track it down, but we can't find specifically where that property is. We probably will find it at some point.
Yeah.
I would really like to go there if it's not private property and see if we could find that ditch that he dug out.
Oh, that seems like a ditch that's 100 years old.
Yeah, but I mean, there's old stone walls throughout the woods here that people have built up. You know, those farm walls that still exist.
There's a good chance that the same people own the farm that
their
family.
Yeah. So this guy he checks off several boxes for us here. He's afraid of witches.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go beyond any of the paranormal aspects of it, he's obviously suffering from some sort of mental illness.
Sure, yeah.
And it's sad that that's the...
It is. And he appears in the paper quite a bit. I mean, that paper was from Westminster, Maryland, which is, it's not terribly far.
But for that time period, he's kind of making the rounds of a fair amount of space. Like, he must have been a real curiosity.
Yeah, he was. And when he died, it actually made the papers.
Yeah, that's...
So, he was kind of reported as almost like a local celebrity.
Yeah.
This person of interest died.
I like the insistence that his parents gave him a proper education and, kind of absolving them of...
It's proper English education.
Yeah.
Not
a superstitious German...
Right, no Dutch stuff. That was... When I say Dutch, of course, I mean Deutsch. That's the Pennsylvania Dutch is German.
It is interesting how that is so early. You have that idea that the German people are giving their families superstitious beliefs, that they're still clinging to some sort of older belief system.
Right.
I don't think that's at all what's going on with Daniel Luckenbalt. I don't think it has anything to do with any superstition from Germany.
No. It goes into a little bit more of his life in the article about his death, actually. So this is from November 7th, 1881. It's from the York Daily. Death of a singular character. So here he's reported on almost like a local celebrity. Last week, we announced the death of Daniel Luckenbalt, which took place at the York County Almshouse. The Hanover Herald of Saturday gives the following interesting facts in reference to the peculiarities of the deceased. Daniel Luckenbalt, who died at the County Almshouse in York Thursday of last week, in his 70th year, was a native of North Cador's Township, but lived in West Mannheim for the last 40 years, until he was taken to the almshouse in December 1878. He was a lunatic, lived under shade of trees in summer, and in winter occupied a small hut in the woods on Mr. John W. Hoffaker's farm. He was very savage and almost entirely deaf. On the morning of December 26, 1878, day after Christmas, Mr. E.C. Hoffaker, not having seen him for several days, went to his hut and saw flames issuing from the roof. Extinguishing the fire, Mr. H. took Luckenbalt to his house and compelled him to wash himself and change his clothing, and then took him to the almshouse. About 6 years before, he'd been sent there, but had escaped and come back to his old haunts. When young, he spent most of his time playing the violin, but after he became deaf, he could no longer tune his instrument. He employed himself making bread baskets. At one time, he was married to a widow named Susan Darfley, but after some years, he got tired of her and sold her to another man for 50 cents.
Bargain at half the price.
1881, you could, you, well, 18 would have been the 1870s, but still sell your wife.
I think it's more of a gentleman's agreement.
I mean, she was a widow. Damaged goods, right?
Yeah. Wow.
50 cents.
Isn't that the real story here? Wow. I want to hear what life with old Daniel was like. She probably willingly went. She probably provided the 50 cents.
I'd say he was probably, what was the quote Raymar's wife said about him?
Too damn peculiar.
Too damn peculiar. I'd say probably Mr. Looking Ball was...
Too damn peculiar.
Too damn peculiar. Yeah, maybe she got the bargain.
Mm-hmm. She could have been living in that oversized grave in some rags. At least he had coffee, though. Yeah.
He did have coffee, and we have coffee tonight. So Allison and I are sharing a wonderful iced coffee. It's very interesting that he goes deaf. Now, it seems like he was maybe showing some signs before he went deaf, but mm-hmm. we've seen this, unfortunately, in people very close to me. I won't go into other details. Sometimes when people go deaf, when they're older, it seems to aid in... Maybe if there's a propensity there already for some sort of...
Yeah, isolation and like just complete isolation coupled with deafness seems to engender a certain amount of...
It's a bad recipe, it seems like.
Yeah, well, because the only thing you have to listen to is what's in your head then.
Right.
There's nothing else getting in.
Right. This is a different kind of wild man. This is someone that just people were scared of, basically, who looked... He obviously had long hair and a beard and was separate from society. The really interesting thing, I think, though, is what you found, his diagnosis.
Yeah, so he goes to the almshouse. And this is fascinating to me that there are these records. You can go in and find relatives of yours that entered the poorhouse.
So the poorhouse or the almshouse.
It's basically a catch-all for anyone who can't take care of themselves, whether it be mental illness.
In York, there was never an insane asylum. That's why one of the things that kicks me about the stupid Toad Road internet legend about a burning insane asylum. Never been an insane asylum in York County of any type. Mm-hmm. They went to the almshouse until they built a place for them in York Hospital. In York, then they would send people with mental problems.
And the curious thing, I think, too, is that the almshouse is in the same location as the county home is now.
Right.
Which is very close to where Dr. Crandall's health school burned down, which is what we think might be sort of like the kernel of truth in the Toad Road story, and that a mental health facility or like an institution did burn down.
It was an old folks home. A health institution did burn down, and not terribly far from the area. It's enough of a truth to make the story stick, but there was never an insane.
Yeah,
and no one died in that fire.
Yeah.
I think
it was uninhabited at that time.
Very few people lived there.
Yeah, it was a caretaker or something, because it was in the process of being sold or something.
Yeah, I think so. There might have been one or two like leftover patients that were still there, but everybody got out. No one got hurt in that fire. No one was killed. So the almshouse, if you were too poor to afford anything, you got sent there. If you were insane, you got sent there. Couldn't pay your medical bills, but couldn't be in the hospital. You went there. So like you said, it's this kind of catch-all place. And there's census records of people who were in there. And we found Dan Luckenball. There's a thing that's going around on Facebook I see. It's reasons people were submitted to insane asylums in the 1800s.
Hysteria, women, like menopause.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's very shocking.
Yeah,
but this was not on that list.
No,
I've never seen this anywhere else.
No, but it's
so form of disease for Dan Luckenball. This is the diagnosis: troubled by ghosts. That is amazing.
I know. I was like, look at this, Tim. It says troubled by ghosts.
His admission sheet. It's not his admission sheet. This is a
the census records in 1880.
And they had to fill out basically a reason why this person was there. Was he in there? And this is just the terms of the time. Mm-hmm. Was he insane or was he an idiot?
Yeah.
And they made a very distinct difference.
And some people who were apparently criminally insane were there too, because there's another person on the census record right above him who says has to be in chains most of the time.
Must have been a horror house, right?
Yeah, it really must have been.
Was he better there? I mean, maybe because he had a roof over his head and three squares, but...
Yeah, it's a tough call.
Yeah. So they had to present a reason why people were there. Especially, I think, if they weren't what they called an idiot.
Yeah.
Different time. This is a different time. So, this is from 1881. It's stamped July 5th, 1881, this form. And you can't read it all. Just the copy is real hard to read. But some of the things you can read, and there's a word obscured, and then it says, is childish. Presumably it's...
His name. It might say Daniel.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Then some things obscured. And I think it's saying, it says either then or there. I think it says then he cries or then he cried something, something, something. And I think they mean like cried out. I don't think it means he was bawling. I think it ends, you can read the end of the sentence and it says, it is right, he is in the poorhouse. So someone made that call. I don't know if this was an attending physician or a nurse or what. The next line, it says, Luckenball is sick. I believe it says sick. Mm-hmm. It's hard to, like, this is somebody's handwriting. So it's really hard to read and it's faded out. The copy's really hard to read. Then there's a word I can't read. And it says, could not support himself. He lived in the woods for either 7 or several years. I can't, it says 7 or several. He lived in the woods for several years and he got unruly. So they, and there's a bunch of words you can't read. So he got unruly, basically. So presumably that's when they committed him.
Mm-hmm.
I found that intensely interesting. I would really like to find where he was living. There might be some trace of it. You know, it's living through
the winter.
I know. In a,
in it, basically like a glorified, grave.
Yeah.
Right? That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And several winters.
Mm-hmm.
He made it through several winters.
I do like that idea that since the outside world turned on him, like his luck changed or what have you, he just kind of turned on it.
Yeah. And well, and to me as a musician, it's always like heartbreaking when I hear
Goya
somebody
or with the art, you know, and
Beethoven. Someone goes deaf, you know, a musician goes deaf or an artist goes blind.
So your only coping skill for those deaths is gone then too.
It's so tragic to me. And I guess it shouldn't be any more tragic than anyone else who goes deaf, but there's something about it. I guess as being a musician to me that just hits home. So he was this violinist who spent all his free time playing violin, and that's taken away from him at the same time, or probably shortly after his parents and his wife were taken from him.
Mm-hmm.
And
would make you want to just go into the woods.
I would.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean.
But you have to be amazingly self-sufficient to live that long.
Yeah. Was he living off the land? Was he living solely off of?
He's probably close enough to orchards there would be enough to survive if people are bringing him little things.
There is food around.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, there was probably a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were probably a little more willing to help each other.
I think so.
If it was someone that just wandered into town, they wouldn't have done it. But for, you know, they would have known his parents. He had a good, you know, like that.
I mean, they talk about Jefferson, like, oh, he grew up in Jefferson, and then, but he's spending his time. That's not very far from where he ended up.
Mm-mm.
It's, you know, a couple miles from Jefferson to Manheim.
Yeah.
It's not that far.
Yeah, but we're talking about people in Hanover who still don't come to York more than like one time a year. These aren't people that moved around a lot.
There'd be dragons.
Yeah, there'd be dragons. And an almshouse.
Yes, the county almshouse was. So, as ever, we will not cease our research on Daniel Luckenbull, but wanted to do this Wild Man show. Thought it was interesting. We will continue, and maybe we'll find out where he lived, and we can do an update for everybody. As it gets warmer, we'll have more opportunity to try to figure out that stuff.
if you wanted to make a replica in the backyard of a 3-foot by 11-foot ditch so we could stage, but put the coffee pot in there.
I'm not entirely opposed to that.
Yeah, and then we'll just set it on fire.
That's not the one he burned. He burned his shack down.
Oh.
The shack the guy made for him.
Oh. And well, then, isn't that a bit of a...
then he lived in a pit, basically.
There might have been ghosts in there.
And he lived in the pit until he became unruly. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. That's the tragic thing. It was... Everybody was fine to let him live there. It's apparently. It's mm-hmm. just when he got unruly that they... All right, time for you to go.
Yeah, I wonder what the tipping point was there.
Not terribly long ago, right?
No, not really. What, he died in the 1880s?
Yeah.
1881?
The funeral goes, yeah, 1881, yeah.
And Harry Houdini is later than that. He's doing that Wild Man show in like mid to late 1890s.
Right. So I wonder if he was the wild man in the women's clothes in Sager's Woods.
Well, think about it. If your clothes have fallen to rags, and you know the way that a pair of pants might splay and look like clothes,
right.
And if you know, maybe he had something to obscure his face, or maybe it was just his hair was covering his face, and they might have said it looked like a woman just because he had long hair.
That's true too. Yeah,
I mean,
these are points I make about the what I feel are the Bigfoot wild men too. Like a lot of times, they'll say they were clothes, you know, but maybe they read hair as clothing, you know, as torn up clothes. I mean,
and you don't want to admit as a woman that you saw a naked man running somewhere either. There is that level of decorum which is still in play there. Where
yeah, in these old articles, definitely. I've
in the same way they're putting like a
what I found
sheets over cherubs. You know,
I found the same article. You know, this, well, not the same article, but two articles describing the same incident in two different papers, and one will have him clothed, and the other will have him entirely naked.
Yeah.
And to me, that just says the reporter or the editor or somebody said, nope, we're not having a naked man in the paper. It's just, it's too shocking.
Yeah. It's too provocative.
Yeah.
People might go out to the woods to look for him. Women might just get up in droves and just head for the hills looking for the wild man. Can we do a Sideshow Giants episode sometime? I would love to talk about giants in York. I would love to talk about...
You love tall people.
Yeah. I feel like they really accomplished something.
Yes, we will do. We will come back to the sideshow.
Okay.
Because it is a gift that keeps giving.
It really does. Pick a niche. There's a sideshow act for that.
Thanks for listening to Strange Familiars, everybody. And thanks to our patrons. Couldn't do the show without you. If you'd like to become a patron, go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. $3 a month gets you bonus content. I try to do at least one full patron episode a month. So far, I've been able to hold to that. Often, I do more than that. Often, I can give more bonus audio, give some free music download, or even a shorter kind of audio extra and so forth. There's different levels of support there. If you can afford more than $3, you can get things like pins and vinyl stickers, t-shirts. You can go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars and see all the options there. We don't have sponsors. We don't have ads. We don't have...
money.
We don't have grants. We don't have anything but
our
patrons.
We don't have NEA support. We don't have a grant writer.
This is not a public radio funded podcast.
We don't have nonprofit status. We don't have...
We have our patrons and our patrons only, and we love you guys. So thank you, patrons. If you want to interact with us and other Strange Familiars listeners, there is a Strange Familiars group on Facebook. It's called Strange Familiars Gathering. There's a regular Strange Familiars page, too, that I make announcements there. But the Strange Familiars Gathering, people post articles and sometimes funny pictures. And recently I put up a possible Bigfoot picture that a friend of ours took a very interesting possible maybe. You know, I'm not saying it's Bigfoot. It's just
interesting.
Very
yeah,
interesting
regardless.
Picture. Stuff like that. I put up, you know, interesting articles and stuff I find. So that's Strange Familiars Gathering. If you're on Facebook, you can come by and join that. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Music, books, art, podcasts, and more. That's darkhollerarts.com. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more. Thank you.